So this is Tracy Seidsinger on October 14th, 2021 at ZanMe on Nostrand Avenue in Brooklyn interviewing Wesley Jean Simon.
Yes. Hi, my name is Wesley Jean Simon, executive chef and owner of ZanMe Restaurant, 1206 Nostrand Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, in the heart of Brooklyn, basically.
Well, thank you so much for sitting with me today in your beautiful restaurant.
Thank you.
Can you tell me a little bit about the beginning of your life and where you come from?
Well, I was born in Haiti, and I migrated to America when I was 14 and lived with my dad in New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey, went through East Orange High School. Then about 11 years ago, I moved to New York to find better opportunity as a kitchen manager. So I started working in Manhattan at TGIF Fridays on Times Square. So that caterpillar, everything that I wanted to do, because being a New Yorker, you cannot have one type of hustle in life. I came to find out in America, New York is way different compared to growing up in Jersey. In Jersey, you have one job, you built a family, buy a house, and you have the mellow life. In New York, it's different. It put out your ambition, like, you know, things you always wanted to do. What's your goal in life? You don't want to play it safe, because New Yorkers, we're not known for playing it safe in life. So I adapt myself very quickly by being in New York, working in Manhattan. Then I opened a to-go spot about 4 years after that workout. It wasn't actually in Crown Heights, corner of Union and Troy Avenue, with my sister. So the foot traffic wasn't there. Business model, I was young at it too, so I let it go. I went back to work with Hard Rock Cafe. But during that time, I was the executive chef for Marcus Simpson in the airport, JFK Airport Terminal 4, Uptown Brasserie. So from there, I started seeing, like, okay, what is so difficult? I cannot open mine. And from working at Hard Rock, after I left the airport, I was the executive sous chef for Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. I start seeing the numbers, I start putting one and two together. I said, okay, if Hard Rock Cafe is making $58 million a year selling burgers and fries, I just need to make $1 million so I could do whatever I want in the kitchen, because I wanted to submit my menu, I wanted to submit my burgers, I wanted to submit things, do some Good Morning America interviews, showcase, like, you know, some type of island food when they're doing, like, you know, summer burgers, summer food. Then there's a lot of bureaucracy working for a corporate world. So from being in a corporate environment, and you have to go through a lot of red tape, sometimes they don't get your food, they don't understand it, then you calculate the food cost, you calculate everything to a T. You could use the same ingredient in the kitchen to give them a different flair, but there, it's too much.
Right.
So, but I wanted to showcase my island food, and that was my goal, and I wanted to open my own restaurant. So we started shopping around, me and a couple of friends, sitting down, having beers, talking. Then we said, you know what? We should open a restaurant. So that's how the whole beginning of ZanMe started.
That's fantastic. What you said, there was a food truck.
We wanted to do a food truck.
Uh-huh.
No, but before I had a to-go spot.
A to-go spot.
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
A to-go spot was basically, I did the same old model of Haitian food. Like when you go to like those to-go spot, the same Caribbean, same menu, and like the typical norm.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't directing the foot traffic. Like, you know, in here, one thing I've realized, everybody's welcome in ZanMe. So you have, like, you know, people from Trinidad and Tobago, you have Jamaican, you have people from France, like, you know, the couple behind us is from Spain. So they will try different food if you present it a different way, instead of a hole in the wall. So that place was like a hole in the wall style, the same typical norm, and it wasn't working in the food traffic, so I wasn't able to direct like the whole neighborhood towards the restaurant. So
you
I had to change the model. Yes. Because restaurant business is all about food sale, food traffic, location. So if you don't have the right location or the perfect location, let's say downtown Brooklyn, but how do you create a business model to bring everybody to you?
Mm-hmm.
So with that, you have to have the right menu. But from working, going back in the city and working for those different big corporations, I started understanding their business model. I started understanding what they put on the menu, how to have something for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, somebody for the first time, they come here, they're from a different background. They want to play it safe, so they don't want to try a burger. They want to get something vegan. Mm-hmm. They don't want to dive into your menu yet because they don't know your menu, but something that looks familiar, like they want to have wings. Mm-hmm. But we have the Creole sauce we put on the wings to give it a different flavor, island flavor, or we do the honey jerk on the wings. So to have people familiar with the word jerk sauce. Mm-hmm. So you have to work them around and understand okay, next time we come back, we're going to try the goat. Next time we come back, we want to try the legume. Mm-hmm. So I have to create that environment in a restaurant. So following those big models, so I have to build my menu this way, and I'm going to keep increasing the menu, bringing different flavor. Mm-hmm. When the pandemic hopefully over, we pray.
Yes.
I'm going to be introducing island wheat type of style. If today they're celebrating, like you said, Dominican Independence Day, I want to do a few Dominican dish to represent Dominican Republic. If they're doing Trinidad and Tobago, they're doing Jamaica, they're doing St. Lucia, I want to present their island, their favorite dish, their main, the national dish on our menu. So everybody feel okay, so we want to go try, how's the Haitians doing over here?
Yes. So this seems to be important to you, making sure that everybody is welcome. Why do you want to make it so that everyone is welcome?
The main thing is the name of the restaurant means friends. It's Zami.
Yes.
So friends, you want everybody to feel at home. And the best compliment I usually get when people eat the food, they're like, oh my God, this tastes like a home cooked meal. It doesn't taste like a restaurant food.
Really?
It's like I'm eating at a restaurant, but I can dive in. I'm taking something to go home with. So I want everybody to feel at home, especially we're not in a tourist area. We're in a neighborhood. So we want to be part of the neighborhood. So you want everybody to feel like, okay, I can always push come to shove late night, whatever. I can always order here and I know the food is going to be great. I'm satisfied with it. So that's my main goal, to develop some type of style. The neighborhood know we got something solid, especially in this area.
Yes.
We don't have that many restaurants in this area that's really pushing out quality food, good gourmet, homestyle cooked meal. So that's what I wanted to focus on, feeding the neighborhood.
And even if it's different on a different day, you know it's going to be good.
Yes.
You know it's dependable.
Yes, and consistency. Mm-hmm. And I told my business partners, listen, the motto with McDonald's, and in business sense, is consistency. It's not the best food in the world, but it's consistent. Mm-hmm. When you get a cheeseburger, you get a cheeseburger.
Mm-hmm.
You get the chicken nuggets. Everywhere you go in the U.S., you're going to get that chicken nugget consistently. So we need to be consistent in our food taste. We need to be consistent on everything we're doing in the restaurants. Food service got to be consistent all the time. Because in Caribbean restaurant, there's a big stigma of its lack of service. And we try to eliminate that. My number one thing is service, food taste. That's my motto in the place. Food taste and service. Because we don't have our liquor license yet. So my main focus is food. If you don't have a good kitchen, might as well close the door. So.
Yeah, good food. And I'm glad you brought up the name, because that's something I wanted to ask you about. Why did you choose
Oh my God, we sat down. We're actually right across from Ben, one of my friends on the restaurant that closed down, called La Caille. And we were in the backyard talking, and was chatting down which name, and everybody start coming with a French name, a this name, that name. I'm saying, why are we doing all that? What's our menu? Haitian Creole. We should get a Creole name.
Mm-hmm.
Then they start shooting names. They could come out with Bookman, the old names and everything. I said, you know what? We should do better. And the names kept going around. And a couple of guys came by the table and gave us a handshake. They said, but Haitians, we greet each other like Sapasi Zamim. So we always say Zami every time. What's up, my friend? What's going on, my friend? What's good, my friend? So the word friends flow all of our Creole to greetings.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as they came to the table and said, what's up, my friend?
There it is.
And I was like, okay. Then we sat down and talked. I was like, yo, we got the name.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah. I told my business partner, Jessica, the name is Zami. She was like, yep.
And when you know.
Yeah, you know, you know. And since then, it was like, okay, let's do this. We got the company name already. We're going to do DBA Zami. We're going to go through it. Mm-hmm. Then everybody, even foreigners, they can say Zami.
Mm-hmm.
So it rolled right off the top.
Mm-hmm.
And it means something dear to everybody. A friend is a friend.
Yes. Yes, that's beautiful.
Thank you.
And I noticed down the street you have the trash cans, you have the mural, community, do you have a minute?
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. Community seems to be a big part of what you're doing, and maybe you could talk about your relationship to the Flatbush community.
But one thing we hide in the community, most of the kids that actually work here live in the surrounding area. Mm-hmm. And I don't live too far from here. I'm walking distance. Like, I'll wake up, like it's a 20 minutes walk, then I'll walk on a good day. Or if I leave early enough, I'll take a walk home, because my girl wants me to exercise more. Doing 16 hours in the kitchen is not enough.
So it's usually not the best form of exercise.
Yes, yes, yes. So community, when we come to this block, we came in, it was pretty bad. Like, you know, last year alone, we had 11 shooting that I counted while we opened our door. So with that, we had to integrate, like, we cannot close the door. We already invest everything we got in here. Like, every dollar I had is in here already.
Yeah.
So how can we fix this? So we started getting to know the community board members. We started getting to know the police department. We started getting to know even the guys in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
That's really acting up. We started getting to know them. Then one time, like, you know, I remember sitting with them over there.
Yeah.
And they were talking about money, how do you open a business and everything. I started giving them business models. I said, okay, it's easy to open a business. I said, how much is this building going for? They start shooting numbers. I said, okay, let's just say it's a million. I bet every last one of you guys, whatever you're doing, there's $10,000 between all you guys. Each. Why don't you just open an escrow account, get a lawyer, and just dump the money in there? I said, well, nobody want to touch drug money, it's legal money and everything. I said, I understand. But you have kids. Don't put 10, put 9. Do something with it. So I said, you know the story of New York, New Amsterdam. It's founded on certain money.
Right.
I said, but at the end of the day, if you take a chance with your money, you can get out of the hood. You can get out and build something and create something. Then we started getting to know each other more. We started talking. Then they used to hang on this side of the block. They'll transfer to the other side. This side, and then less and few of them hanging out here. They start moving around more. But they never really come in here and give us an issue. So with that, working with the community board, we put trash can in the neighborhood. We make sure they get it. Every party, everything that's going on in Black Party, we'll send trays of food. Because
yeah, you did the block party over on Parkside.
Yes, yes,
right?
Yes, yes. And we got another thing going on, I think, Sunday. We're presenting some music at the park with one of the artists that's usually performing here. She's performing in the park. We're sponsoring that too. So on Sunday between 1 and 4 o'clock, she's doing 2 sets. So it's part of the community work. Like, you know, bringing Creole Haitian culture back to Brooklyn. Because as a Haitian person, our country, what it's going through, we can actually say there's no more country. There's no governor. There's nothing in Haiti right now. So we have to create home wherever we are, which is difficult, but I'm getting old. I don't know when this problem is going to get fixed.
Yep.
I'm hoping to have kids. I don't know when is this problem going to get fixed. So instead of concentrating, okay, let's accumulate money and go back home, this is looking like very well like home right now.
Yeah.
So what I got to do in my house? I got to clean my house. I got to make my house look better. I got to fix my house.
Yeah.
So that's how I see this community. If I'm going to be in this area, and I'm not moving out anytime soon.
Right.
My girl loved the area. I love the area. We love the reason I have an apartment in Crown Heights. I used to live there. I'm moving Flatbush area on purpose because of the food, the cuisine. You could walk out of your house. You walk into different stores. You get, like, you know, things you cannot find in supermarkets. You find it in those grocery shops.
Mm-hmm.
And me loving to cook. So this is perfect for me to develop a Caribbean menu.
Yes.
So
can you say some about that? What are some of the foods that you really look to when you're here that you're glad you can find?
Oh yeah, like breadfruit. You cannot find breadfruit anywhere but in this area.
Mm-hmm.
You could go to Crown Heights, Park Slope, anywhere. You cannot find a good breadfruit. And right here down the street, not even a block over, this guy sells breadfruit.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I'll make breadfruit chips. I'll make breadfruit pudding. I make different type of things with breadfruit. Like, because it's big on the island. Jamaica's is big on the breadfruit. We all big on breadfruit. I did a breadfruit bowl one time. Carve out the inside and stuff it up with nice fillet of mahi-mahi. We marinated with peppers and onion and everything, and I baked it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you cut it open, everybody just start taking a piece and everything fall apart. So it's little things like that I like to do, which I'm going to be putting on the menu.
Yeah.
And I'm working with different things, like I want to integrate on the menu. So those rare vegetables, we can only find in this area, because the area is fully full of Caribbean. It's little Caribbean. So you're going to find things from home, like, hey, some leaves, some, like, you know, some type of spice. You go East 18th and Church, you will find those spice. And you go down in Church Avenue, right there on North Shore and Church, you will find some vegetable and fruits that's from the Caribbean. So that is better for me because the restaurant is close enough. I never run out of anything Caribbean.
Right, right. Yeah, well, so, while you're talking about specific foods, I definitely wanted to ask you about black rice and your black rice.
Well, it's Jimmy John John, like Haitian, like, no, it's not black rice, it's Jimmy John John.
Yes.
Which is John John is a mushroom, it's a black mushroom, like a truffle style mushroom. That's where you get the color from. And the earthy taste, that's where you get it from. So you gotta boil the mushroom, let it soak in water for overnight. The best way to do it is let it soak in water overnight. Then you use that juice from it. That's what you make the rice with, the water, the black, dark water. That's what make it, give it that color and the taste and the texture. So it's mushroom rice. So John John is the mushroom from Haiti. So it's called Jiri John John. So we're big on that, and I think that's the only rice we do for now, because it's rare. The only place I think in Brooklyn you can find that rice every day of the week. People will do it on Saturday or Sunday, but they will not do it every day of the week, because mushroom is so rare to find that type of mushroom.
Well, and your portion is so big, you're very generous, like
yes. But you know, our culture, they like having some food and take the rest home. So if we're going to feed our people, we want to feed them a healthy portion of meal. And people never complain like, yo, the food is not enough in here. So we want to make sure you get enough food. If you want to save some, take some home. Because you came from, it's like going to a friend or family house. You eat something, they give you a to-go box. So we want to create that type of environment too.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Yeah.
You said you lived in Haiti until you were 14?
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about what that was like for you growing up?
Well, living in Haiti, that was like my best years was in Haiti, when you think about it. That's when I'm coming of age, understanding things, going to private school, and I never seen a country the way it is.
Yeah.
This is nothing I recognize. The country started getting bad, I think, in 91. I saw my first blackout, like, you know, there was no power in 91. When that happened, we all walk out, like, it's like the world is ending. Like, that's coming from where the country was great, basically. Food, education, everything. We had all infrastructures, running trains, everything you need. Like, you could go to the movie theaters. Now there's not even one movie theater in Hawaii. Like, the rest, the things we don't even pay attention to in America. Like running water, like opening your faucet, clicking up the line.
So
yeah. People, like somebody told me, like one of the guys across the street, oh, we in the hood, we in the hood. I said, you're not in the hood. You live in a 5-star hotel. You've never seen the hood with your own eyes. I said, you probably see, like, you make fun of people in Africa or third world country like Haiti or anything, but you never seen the hood with your whole eyes. I seen the hood. Like, you know, people, when it rains, there's hole in the ceiling, they have to sleep standing up. I seen that. In a third world country like Haiti, running water, non-existent. You know, power is just like, you probably get it in 3 hours a week. And this is
calculating the amount of hours you do have and not how much you don't.
Yes. Yeah. So, like, I was talking to one girl that came from Haiti last year, and she's 22. And I asked her, when was the last time you see a full day with electricity in Haiti? She was like, so from 0 to 22 years, she'd never seen a full day of electricity, like, you know, or running water. That's difficult, like, you know, but me growing up, I never witnessed things like this in my eyes. Like, I was there when the best part of the country, and it's very bad, sad, like, when I go to Haiti and I'm looking at what the country became. Because my best years, I was telling everybody, the reason why I'm doing a Haitian restaurant, I'm doing all this, is nostalgia from home. I'm happy with what, like, you know, my upbringing and what's going on in my country. That's why I can create this and felt proud to do this.
Yes.
So that what's going on down there right now, I don't know any of it. Like, this is foreign to me.
Yeah.
And it hurts. Even though my dad moved back, my dad was like, I'm moving back. I was like, you're 80-something years old? Have at it. But we make sure he's okay. Like, you know, he got everything in his house. Mm-hmm. But that's like, you got to create your own well, pump it, your own powder solar. You got to do everything, your own infrastructure within your house. And growing up in Haiti, I grew up with nothing but sisters. To come back to your question, so my best years, food, family, and I'm the only son on my mother's side.
Oh, wow.
So I'm the youngest one, the only son, so there's always cooking around me.
So maybe you could tell me one of the memories from, you know, who was cooking, what.
I remember one Sunday, was the holiday. I don't remember which holiday. And my mother wanted me to learn how to cook, clean, iron my own clothes, because she said, you're going to school in America, you're going to high school in America, you need to learn everything. I'm not going to be around. I don't know what's going to happen. You need to learn everything. So I started learning how to cook at a young age, like 10, 11 years old. Then I remember on Sunday was a holiday. I sat there with her supervision. I make a whole Sunday dinner. And everybody was eating. Was like, oh, not bad for a man who was in Haiti. Like, a man, men don't cook. I even had a cousin 2 years ago when I was in Haiti. I said, nah, it's my turn to cook. They was like, cook? Men don't cook. I was like, really?
After you've been cooking for how many years?
Like, for 15 years, men don't cook. I was like, okay, I'm cooking. So I went to the marketplace, get everything. I did something they don't do on that side of that country, which is in a rural area. I did barbecue for them. So I went and got the meat that I want, like, you know, the butcher, the cow. I got the right place. I got some steak. I got everything. I make barbecue, so I got some molasses. I got some brown sugar, and I got all my spices. I make barbecue sauce for them from scratch. Mm-hmm. And I put, like, you know, a fin. You know those fin, the grill from the fin?
Right.
Put it on, like, you know, hot stones. So I made barbecue for them. It was like, and they started eating. I was like, you didn't boil the meat? You didn't do this? You didn't? I was like, no. It's going to cook. Watch. So I had to make barbecue for them. So those are the fun memories I have of Haiti.
Uh-huh.
And whenever I go, I still try to recreate it. Like, you know, because where we're from in Haiti, I don't say there's no poverty, but it's a little bit more comfortable. It's not in Port-au-Prince area where all this war is going on. So it's more peaceful where we go. Mm-hmm. But now there's no entry basically in the country. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, we have a little bit of time. I don't know how much time you have left. I have a little bit of time. But
okay.
What else do you think is important for me and for the project to know about?
It's important that, like, you know, there's a lot of Haitians that we're meeting, and a lot of Caribbean people, Jamaican, Trinidadian, we're meeting in this area, that's been talking about fully invest in this community. And you got a lot of young black entrepreneurs right now opening different stores, opening different places in the area. They want to revitalize the area, because last time we sat down, it was like, yo, we don't have to wait for the government to do nothing for us. Because we could build our own wealth, we could build our own neighborhood, because the part of waiting and waiting and waiting, look how long this area can. We're waiting for integration. Look how long it's taken. So you got guys like up the street, Dell Biscuit and Beer, great friend Chris, he's into developing. He just got another place next door to his store and put something. Now he's thinking about, like, you know, open up the brewery a little bit bigger. Now he's hiring more people from the neighborhood. And all the guys that work for him is walking distance in this neighborhood. So just picture things like, you know, the Caribbean neighborhood never had. Somebody rolling out of bed and walk 5 blocks to work. It's happening now.
Yes.
And this is
and
your neighborhood.
Yes, yes. Sharing.
Yes. You have your kids, like, you know, could walk by and be like, yo, my dad work here. And your dad putting quality food out or quality beer out. And people in the neighborhood are like, oh, yeah. That's Chris's boy. That we never had, like, we lost that in black communities a long time ago. And I see these guys try to recreate that again by leaving the neighborhood, raising their kids. So if I see these kids walking by, I'm like, what are you doing? Walk on this side of the street. Like, you know, paying attention to, like, you know, taking care of each other. So that is happening now in this neighborhood. Everybody know who's who, everybody understand who's who. Like the guy with the dry cleaner, he don't live too far from here. The guys from Immaculate moved out of town, but they used to from the neighborhood. They're leaving Long Island now, I think. And the guys that work for them, one of the guys that works in the kitchen, live down this block. So basically, you know everybody in the neighborhood, who's who got this business or not. The two gentlemen that work on the record store down the block, live right down this place. So they're like two blocks down on Hoffman. So they're all from the neighborhood. So
which means there's like more interconnection.
Yes, from everybody. Everybody in this neighborhood basically working towards the neighborhood. Little things we have is cleaning, street cleaning. That's part of the government, but everybody cleaning the front of their stores now. You got the guys who just got the grocery shop right down the street. They live not too far from me, like six blocks away. The guys who own the bodega, they live right upstairs. All their kids being there, running around. We all know each other. I'd be like, hey, when the kids try to cross the street without, like, you know, waiting for the light, I'd be like, stop. They'd be like, yeah, Wesley, get on them. So it's that I like about this neighborhood. It's upcoming, it's new. And people actually, you see the investment in the community.
Yes, and you're a big part of helping to make that happen. I mean, it's beautiful what you say about this being home, that you have to invest in it for it to become what you want.
Yes, we're working with the community board right now in the Brooklyn 71st Precinct. The gentleman that handled the community affair, we're working on revitalize all this graffiti in the area. So instead of, like, you know, one thing I realized, artists don't tag other artists' work. Mm-hmm. So they all want to be artists. They're not doing graffiti. For them, it's art.
Right, it's self-expression.
Yeah, self-expression. So when they're doing self-expression like this, instead of us throwing a stone and like, yo, why are they doing graffiti? Why is this so ugly? We try to find out who's the artist. So we're asking other artists when we see nice graffiti ones that just don't have the funding to really get all the paint. Mm-hmm. We're gonna start asking the artists, like, okay, find out who's those artists. Now, instead of them tagging those people doors, we're gonna give them a door. Mm-hmm. So you legally can put your best work in this storefront. So that's what we're gonna be working on. So now we're gonna know who's who. Mm-hmm. And the other artists, you don't never see their painting over each other's. Mm-hmm. Everybody pick a door, but you don't know who's doing it. Mm-hmm. But now we want to bring the light to the forefront. Like, okay, who's doing it? This is your door. If you want yours to look better than this guy, so put your best work here. And they're not going to tag each other, so you're going to be going to the whole neighborhood. This is a 2-year project I'm going to be working on. So when you drop this whole area, Caribbean area, they're going to be working with the store owners. They get the gate. You tag the gate. You do the gate. That's your work. That's your artwork. So they find somewhere to really put their artwork and respect it, and they're going to respect each other's artwork. So instead of, like, you know, let's get them arrested, the kids.
Right, and find the good in it and elevate the good in it.
Yes, so you don't know who's going to be the next Basquiat doing that.
Exactly. You're going to help find them.
Yes.
Can you say, I'll ask maybe one more question, and then if you have anything else you want to add.
No, you can ask more questions.
Oh, great. I mean, I could ask you questions forever.
I can answer a lot of questions.
Well, music seems to be a big part of Xanadu.
I'm a music lover. Like, beside cooking, if I'm cooking, I'm dancing. So there's always got to be music. If I'm cooking, there's no music, I don't feel comfortable. The two got to work with each other. Because I started going subconscious, then I start throwing things in the pot, then the music keep flowing. And how you feeling? If it is a little salsa playing, a little hot, something very upbeat, and I add up a little bit, like more spice and make it more picante. Mm-hmm. So little things like that, I feel like it works with me. So from that, music is a big part of us from the island of Haiti. We love music in general. We got so many music festivals. So we wanted to offer something to the neighborhood where you could know, like today, on Thursdays, you know, anywhere else, you could come here and listen to some good jazz, local artists. During the pandemic, we give them a platform.
Right.
Instead of going, like, they cannot perform nowhere, they sit outside, we let them play in the neighborhood. And you see the amount of people used to just walking by, coming from work, and just stood in the corner and just listen with their bag coming from work and just stood there. Mm-hmm. When you have a great jazz artist, like we got one of our favorite that plays here all the time, Paul Bouvier. He's like a rock and roll, like a Haitian rock and roll jazz artist type of style. And the guy, I think he's like the Haitian Jimi Hendrix. I remember him playing, the whole neighborhood was outside. Mm-hmm. And he just kept going and he's just there. He's digging into that guitar and I'm looking at, okay, the neighborhood loving it. We're doing something good. So we keep up with the music, we keep up with the performance. We're starting spoken words, I think, in 2 weeks.
Really?
Yes, so we wanna be invite a lot of people for self-expression, like, you know, do some spoken words, some poetry. comedy, whatever. And I love comedy, so maybe I'll grab the mic one day and do a few jokes. So, like, I'm into arts, like cooking, music, anything arts, I'll do it.
Yeah, it seems like food is the hub, but there's so many people that are connected.
Yes, yes. Because the neighborhood, surprisingly, there's a lot of artists that live in the neighborhood. A lot of people, a lot of kids that's like, you know, actors that lives in the neighborhood. So I want them to feel like, okay, there's a place we could all hang out, we could listen to some music. If I want to get a spot to do my performance, whatever, this is your place. And if you're from the neighborhood, you live in the neighborhood, if you need to have a party in here, like, or you want to do an interview, you want to shoot a film or anything, as long as you're from the neighborhood, we give the place for free. Like, okay, you could shoot around this time and that time. Mm-hmm. This is your time frame. If you want to come early in the morning, you need the whole place. You got to come very early before we open. This is our slot. This is our hours. So we have guys that come in and shoot, like, you know, interviews like we're doing. We got guys who stand in front of the mirror and do photo shoots. Like those rappers that putting their little album out, they'll come and do a little sketch in front of the mirror, which is great. You know, any exposure is exposure. Mm-hmm. So, but I want to create somewhere like, you know, we don't have the funding, but if I have the funding, like a community center style with a kitchen. That's what I wanted to create. Like, you know, I could do like cooking classes, free cooking classes. Anybody, you want to cook anything, I'm with you. Yeah. And have all the chefs come in, throw something in a pot, like, you know, give out. Like from Carmelo, talk to the chef, like, oh, you do Italian food, and it's 6 hours from you in this month. Mm-hmm. You got to give me 6 hours. They'll be glad to give me 6 hours, but we don't have that in this neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So something like that we need to create to revitalize the neighborhood better. When everybody found there could be a place that can go and learn something every day and have fun, mm-hmm. it'll be better for the neighborhood. But I'm telling you, it's getting better.
It's getting better.
Compared to last year and this year,
yes.
The shootings went down. So I think it's going to be fine. It's going to be great.
Well, tell me a little bit more about that. If funding was no option, like, what would the future look like?
Funding was no option. There's a supermarket that closed on Rogers.
Right.
It was big enough for a community center. Uh-huh. Like arts, culture, kitchen. And you're looking at a place on Flatbush, the market that closed and they're opening a new place. Mm-hmm. They're giving those vendors those little booths. You're looking at the price of those vendors. I went over there, they invite me over there. I wanted to put a concept there, a different type of concept they don't have in this area. Because my mind is always going up about new menus. And when we look at the price, they're starting at $2,700 for a small little booth like that size. Basically a 10 by 10. $2,700 a month. There's no way people from this neighborhood have an idea.
Who's that going to? Yeah.
Any chef, any wannabe chef. Any guys who've been famous on Instagram, got a million followers, who said, okay, I should take my cooking to another level, that being working in a restaurant, cannot afford that. They don't have that type. I can do it because I have an established business already. Mm-hmm. But you're looking at the new guys, they can't do it. And I went over there and checked it out on purpose. Try to go through the process just to see what's in depth, what they're bringing to our neighborhood. When you're looking at those vendors, they're talking about the booth is about like $1,200 a month. That's a lot of money for the neighborhood. Because we don't have that type of funding and cash in that neighborhood. And they got a prep kitchen, they got a concept kitchen where you could shoot shows, cooking shows and everything. And you're looking at the rates, it's so high. So basically, these guys, they're offering this market space that used to be in that area. They're offering it at a low rate to come in. Then after that, they're gonna bump up to the regular price. Now you're pushing these guys out again. So this is bringing down the neighborhood by not having the right funding. But if we have some community, all the tax money that came in, you're looking at the politician that just left. The new ones, I'm hoping they get better. Like, you know, the community, the district leaders. Like, you know, you got Rita Joseph now that just came in. But the guy before that, Matthew Eugene, I think, the way the article came out on the Haitian Times and different newspaper, that he was allocating funds to other neighborhood, other districts. And he did not put the funds back in his own neighborhood. I remember during the pandemic, we didn't have that glass enclosure. Mm-hmm. And when we approach everything, if you would have done like Park Slope, where they approached the businesses and invested in those enclosures, the street siding and everything, so we could keep those businesses going, you would have somebody in your community board that would have done the same thing, allocate those funds to these small businesses. The neighborhood looked dingy because none of the signs being done. How about you get a company that's from the neighborhood to do signs, mm-hmm. I know a guy, Travis Sign, that's right off the street. That is doing a lot of signs in the neighborhood. Get a grant, get a contract, let him revitalize this whole area and do new signs from people from the neighborhood.
There's talent, there's energy, there's desire, so facilitate it, fund it.
Basically, the business owners are struggling. They'll be like, okay, I got a new front, I can design it, yes, do it. Then that's how we rebuilt our neighborhood. Little things like that, we invest in our business in the neighborhood to make the neighborhood better, but it's not being done. But hopefully the new politicians that get elected can see something about this neighborhood or any other neighborhood.
So it's interesting, my question to you was if funding wasn't an issue, what would the future look like? And your answer is sort of that funding should be the issue.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like, because funding would always be the issue.
Yes.
Because I'm very realistic in life. I'm not gonna be like, oh, if funding wasn't the issue, then we would have built a skyscraper. I came from a country that wasn't a skyscraper. So we don't dream. Everything I ever had, I built it. I work hard, we make contacts, we make it work. Everything we ever had. And we believe in that, and we're happy with whatever we have in our lives. That's why we always see Asian people always smiling, they're always happy. It's because we satisfied with what we have in life. We want more, we want to work for more, but we happy at this moment right now because there's a saying in Creole, every day I wake up, I'm good. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's very obvious to me. I think I've walked by on days when, you know, I hear more really difficult news about Haiti, and I walk by and so many people here are smiling, laughing, and sharing, and it's very obvious that there is a lot of joy continued to share.
Yes, energy is still there because happiness, like the mishaps or bad luck or whatever happened to Haiti, don't make us as a people. It's not our doing. We did not create the 2010 earthquake. It happened. The rain, the storm, it happened. It could have happened in New Orleans. It happened in New Orleans. It wasn't created by people from Louisiana. So that doesn't mean they all should jump off a bridge. Big in that. We don't believe like, okay, shit happened. Sorry about my language, but it happened. So we got to keep moving on. We're going to keep pushing. They break down, we're going to rebuild. We're going to keep rebuilding because we got to leave legacy. And we're big on legacy as Haitians. So we're going to keep building, keep building. If it happened, it happened, but we're going to make the best of it every day. So that's what I think about when I see this neighborhood. Last year wasn't that good, but this year is better. Who would have said? So we're going to keep smiling. We're going to have fun. We're going to listen to good music and eat some good food.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yes, yes. So.
Very good. Anything else you want to share right now?
Not really. I can't think of nothing on top of my head.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the interview.